please the court. Dominic Carolla for Appellant Scott Timber Company and Lynchburg Forest Products Company. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal, please. The Supreme Court, in cases like Winter, Munoff v. Green, and Masaryk v. Armstrong, has made clear that a preliminary injunction is an extraordinary remedy reserved for exceptional cases where a plaintiff makes a clear showing and substantial proof that he or she is entitled to such relief under each of the four preliminary injunction factors. This is not one of those cases. In this case, the district court granted a preliminary injunction based on a finding that plaintiffs demonstrated serious questions going to the merits. The district court expressly used that finding of serious questions as a proxy for finding the plaintiffs satisfied their burden on irreparable harm and public interest factors of the four-prong preliminary injunction standard. In both instances, the district court committed plain legal error that warrants reversal of the preliminary injunction under this court's precedents and those of the Supreme Court. Far from an exceptional case.
Well, let's put that aside for a moment.
Sure.
Let's have a little bit of a discussion.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Of course.
Okay, excellent. So, did you dispute the district court used our test that if there's serious questions going to the merits, which we recognize still survives?
Yes, sir.
Did you hear that the district court carried that finding?
Sliding scales?
The first prong, serious questions. There were serious questions here on the merits.
We are disputing whether or not.
Remember, at the preliminary injunction hearing, there were competing affidavits about whether or not there were sightings or whatever the correct terminology is for the marble or not.
Sure.
In this particular tract.
Correct.
So they were competing declarations.
We do understand that there was three experts that we presented whose testimony was not contradicted in the record. And a key statement was made by Ms. Starkovich was that under the based on the sampling and design protocol that was used, there's 95% probability of probable absence of the murrela in the harvest unit, and that testimony was not rebutted in the record. And none of those three experts, Dr. Hewitt's, Dr. Starkovich's, or Dr. Marslaw's testimony, was even mentioned in the district court's opinion. So we do strongly contend that the district court erred on the serious questions issue. However, even if the court accepts that there are serious questions in the record, the district court clearly errs as a matter of law in relying on that finding.
So even under, under Winter, even under our test, when we, in the case where we adopted, we still recognized our sliding scale test version.
In Alliance of the Wild Rocks.
Contrail.
Yes.
We made it clear that they still have to show irreparable harm.
Correct.
Right. Now, the district court, and I will acknowledge when I read it, it is confusing because it doesn't look like she may have utilized the same test for serious questions for evaluating irreparable harm, which is the point you were just making.
Yes, I mean, in ER 13, that portion of the district court.
But that would be a legal error, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And that's what we're continuing on appeal, that the district court found unequivocally that if marble murrelets do not occupy the parcel, there's no likelihood of irreparable harm. And the district court found that that was the same issue on the merits, whether or not birds were nesting in the harvest unit. And the district court only found serious questions on the issue. And you know, you reference the affidavits. If you look at the wild swan case, actually, I take that back. If you look at the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project case v. Shelley, that was a Voter Rights Act case regarding the effect of postcard ballots, whether or not it would have a discriminatory effect. And what this court said is there's a significant dispute in the record, however, as to the degree and significance of the disparity of the discriminatory results. Thus, although plaintiffs have shown a possibility of success on the merits, we cannot say at this stage that they have shown a strong likelihood. And that's this case. At most, plaintiffs demonstrated a possibility of success on the merits, and therefore it was an error of law to use that finding as a basis for finding a likelihood of irreparable harm.
I just confused myself. applying the scale test, the first thing the district court judge had to find is that there are serious questions going to the merits. That's in lieu of the traditional test where the district court would usually find that the plaintiff is substantially likely to prevail. We just changed the way you analyze that first part. But we still, and in the ESA context, the Supreme Court has made it clear that the other two factors always tip in favor of the species. That is public interest and what's the other one?
Yeah, and the balance of equities.
The balance of equities always tips in favor of the species.
But I think I'm
like, well, so the key thing in all these ESA cases is irreparable harm. And here we're in Section 9, not Section 7. Right?
That's true.
Okay. So, the district court, where I think it looks like the district court may have got off base, it is not to make a factual determination. Just as you were just saying, to make a determination that it's not reasonably likely, you know, that the evidence you produced outweighed the evidence they produced, and therefore there was no possibility of irreparable harm. She made that finding and said she apparently used a wrong legal standard.
I'm not sure I can see that, Your Honor. The district court equated.
I don't need to concede anything.
I think what the district court did is they equated any violation of Section 9, any potential injury to any assailant species, as irreparable. And what it found in its opinion is that if marble murrelets do not occupy the parcel, there is the likelihood of irreparable harm. So it did make a factual determination on the issue of whether marble murrelets occupy the harvest area. It just found that it didn't demonstrate that it was likely. Demonstrated that it was really possible, but it raised serious questions on the merits. Now, we contend that the district court absolutely conflated the merits inquiry and the irreparable harm inquiry, because the district court essentially said, well, any violation of Section 9 is per se irreparable harm, is essentially what the district court was saying by saying that those two factors were intertwined. But the Supreme Court has made it clear that irreparable harm, as you yourself said, Your Honor, is a separate inquiry. And certainly, there is a lot of precedent both in this court and in district courts in the circuit that a plaintiff in an ESA case is required to demonstrate irreparable harm at the species level and not any violations.
Mr. Barillo, if the district court judge has said a serious question is raised by the conflicting affidavits as to whether there were or less more than a lot of murrelets in this particular snake basin area, and had gone on to say, and we consider the plaintiff's affidavits as weightier than the defendant's affidavits on that issue, so that there probably was irreparable harm. That would be sufficient, right?
I think that they have to demonstrate slightly, more likely than not.
More likely than not. So if you just go that additional step and take the same affidavits, but give them credibility, the plaintiff's affidavit is given greater weight to the plaintiff's affidavits. That would have been all right.
That's true, and the district court didn't do that.
Didn't do that. And that's the area that you say. Now, if we remanded to the district court, is that what you're going
to do? I don't think that that's necessary, because the district court found that there was compelling arguments, compelling experts on both sides, and that the plaintiff didn't present a strong enough case. And that's why we're continuing this. Or should be reversed.
Well,
should get a second bite of the apple. We presented a multidisciplinary team of experts below, and the plaintiffs presented one had every opportunity to present as many as they wanted, as many subjects and scientific disciplines as they wanted, but they didn't. And it wouldn't be fair to remand, nor would it be necessary to remand for further proceedings in this matter.
Because it was an error of law.
I think in this case the necessary findings were made on the two factual issues before this court was reversed. And I want to get to the serious questions issue, because there's been a lot of talk about.
Pardon me, are you saying that the record shows that as a matter of law, the defense affidavits are weightier on the issue of irreparable harm than the plaintiff's affidavits?
The plaintiffs didn't meet the burden to demonstrate irreparable harm is likely. Their affidavits didn't meet that standard. And the district court found.
Well, the plaintiff's affidavits said there are, more or less, if you cut the trees, there won't be any nesting areas for the murrelets. Does that mean at least the burden of presentation of evidence?
As we said, though, that their affidavits, the substance of the affidavits for Dr. Golightly was based on scientific uncertainty. And I think there's good reason why the court didn't find that the plaintiffs met their burden, because they hadn't met their burden that it's likely. That's why the court found that there are serious questions on the merits. The judicial court refused to choose between the experts.
Well, that's the problem. When you got to, when they get to, when she got to irreparable harm, that was the problem.
If I may, let's reach the first.
Yes.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Daniel Cruz, and I represent the plaintiffs in this case. I'm joined by my co-counsel, Nicholas Keeney, and Brian Skinner. The forests at issue in this case are well over a century old, and they can be cut down in the span of weekends. Once logged, these mature and old growth trees cannot be put back on the stems. And without a preliminary injunction, this case and so many like it are effectively over before the merits of the case can even be decided.
They're only over for birds that are there, but if there are no birds there, it doesn't make any difference, right?
Well,
there are a formulation of that was argued, which is, did the district court judge adequately consider item two factors in Butter in finding that a serious question as to the merits, which sounds to me like liability, carried the day as establishing a probability of irreparable damage, which sounds a lot like damages. Does the liability finding satisfy the damage issue?
I think it's a matter of law, the mere finding of a likelihood of success in the merits even, or serious questions going to the merits, does not establish a likelihood of irreparable harm, I think. In the Cottonwood environmental decision, as this court explained, that there's no presumption of irreparable harm, even in endangered species in cases, just because of finding of either serious questions or even a likelihood of success in the merits. But I think that in this case, the district court made specific findings about irreparable harm. Counsel for the defendants has argued that one paragraph of the district court's decision is inadequate, that she improperly conflated the harm and merits factors. That argument entirely ignores the second paragraph of the decision.
When I read the district court's order, what she said was, the district court found that there were factors was to resolve that factual determination on, did she believe their experts, did she believe yours, and therefore she could make a finding based on who she credited. She didn't do that, she just seems to have fucked over.
Well, the merits factor and the irreparable harm factor are two separate factors in the preliminary injunction test. And this court and other courts have explained that they are related, but they are two separate factors. And when reviewing the sufficiency of the district court's finding on the merits, this court need only find that there is evidence in the record to support a logical and plausible conclusion that there are serious questions on the merits. And based on the testimony of Dr. Golightly, based on the wealth of information that's in the record, I think the district court very plainly did not abuse its discretion in making that finding. That finding was based on a correct legal standard.
This is the evidence that was sustaining the finding. The issue is, did she make a separate finding?
That's right. I think you're absolutely right. The court then needs to decide whether the district court made a separate finding of irreparable harm. And I think the district court would have erred if there was only the finding that the satisfaction of the merits factor satisfied the irreparable harm factor per se. But that's not what the district court did here. The district court in one paragraph said, because they satisfied the merits, I'm finding that there was irreparable harm. But then Judge Aiken went on in the next paragraph to make specific factual findings about exactly why the plaintiffs used and enjoyed this area.
Can you give me the citations of such a...
Yes, the citation is at page 14 of her order, which is ER 14, excerpt of record 14, where the district court specifically said that the defendants have in fact alleged an interest in the specific members of Margot Mule species. Plaintiffs may care about the species as a whole, but in the suit they assert an interest in the Margot Mule that occupy the Benson Ridge parcel.
Are you in page 14? You're reading from the first paragraph or the second paragraph?
I'm sorry, the first paragraph of that page, which is the second paragraph of the judge's decision on irreparable harm. Judge Aiken said that the plaintiffs have specifically alleged an interest in observing Margot Mule in that parcel. They cannot observe Margot Mule if it is clear cut, since irreparable harm is bound up in the serious questions inquiry, and since plaintiffs demonstrated an interest in the pair of Margot Mule allegedly seen flying over the Benson Ridge canopy, plaintiffs have established likely irreparable harm favoring the injunction. So, in addition to the first paragraph,
yeah, the question is there a probability of irreparable harm depends on whether the morals are more likely to have been there than not to have been there?
Well, respectfully, I think that is an incorrect premise. I think if the district court made an error in law, it was limiting the plaintiff showing irreparable harm to showing the harm to the morals specifically. The defendant's entire argument.
But what the harm if you're not there?
Plaintiffs have expressed an interest not only in the marble roulettes that are in the area that they have alleged are in the area, but also in the recreational interest and aesthetic interest in this forest in general. And this
No. You've got to show that it's more likely than not that roulettes in the snake basin, that is, the central portion, existed before there can be irreparable harm to them by cutting the trees.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree, and I think there's a wealth of case law from the Supreme Court and from this circuit that says otherwise.
Okay.
Going back to the decision in Winter, the Supreme Court explained that to obtain a preliminary injunction, a plaintiff must establish that he is irreparably harmed. They explained again.
He is irreparably harmed because he can't sell morals, right?
Well, no, I think that there is not a zone of interest assessed for irreparable harm.
What is it for show abstractions and get to the facts? The aesthetic interest here of bird watchers is to see birds. If they aren't there, he doesn't have any aesthetic interest in seeing them.
Your Honor, I disagree again. It's not to see the forest, it's to see the birds. It is in the Declaration of Max Beacon and the Declaration of Francis Etherington. The plaintiffs have specifically alleged an interest not only in observing marble murrelets, but in using this area for aesthetic and recreational purposes.
The Endangered Species Act has nothing to do with that.
It does. And this court has held that even in Endangered Species Act cases, the interest in the forest generally is recreational and aesthetic.
Forest is not an endangered species?
No, but the forest is more than a century old. And the forest cannot be brought back if it's cut down with the
plaintiffs. It's not for a century anyway.
Certainly not with any of the plaintiffs' issues. Your Honor, I direct this court to several cases where the court specifically looks at the plaintiff's interest in the forest generally, even though the subject of the litigation had nothing to do with trees.
So, well, it's just resettled to your judgment of whatever's coming, but does that all just go to standing?
No, I think it goes to irreparable harm as well. I think the plaintiffs have an obligation to show harm for purposes of standing. Of course,
the heart of your case, though, is good to what your complaint is all about. There's a violation of section by cutting this tract of land. There's a violation of section 9. You're going to take the habitat.
That's right. Correct.
That's the violation that you have to establish. Right? In order to get a judgment in your favor.
That's right. We have to establish. Ultimately, that take is likely. Here, we have to raise serious questions that take is likely because we're only asking for.
Now, let me ask you this. Now, in getting that, if you were to go to a trial on the merits, would the fact that your aesthetic, your client's aesthetic interest, the great joy that they get out of the forest and whatnot, does that have anything to do with the merits? Let me get to the merits. that relate to the preliminary injunction?
Because it relates specifically to irreparable harm. The merits have to do with whether change is likely, whether Marvel
has to do with it. It's in the traditional formulation of the preliminary injunction test under Winter, it's very important. The test is very likely to prevail on the merits of your claim. It's likely to prevail on the merits of your claim. Cutting this track before you enter the forest is going to be a violation of Section 9.
That's ultimately plaintiff's burden at trial, which we'd like to get to as well.
That's true. Judge Lambert knows this better than I do now, but it's been many years since I've been a judge on the district court. But you look at whether or not they're going to prevail on that, there's a substantial likelihood they're going to prevail on that claim.
That's right.
Here the district court said, well, on our formulation, we said, okay, there's a pretty close question. There's serious questions going to the merits of that claim. So now, and I know these other two factors, they're going to always be in favor in a section of the ESA case in favor of the plaintiff. So the critical inquiry now focuses on irreparable harm.
That's right.
And, you know, it's not clear to what the district court judge did here.
Sure. And to be fair, what the district court said was that the plaintiffs have easily met their burden in establishing serious questions. The district court did not say that we failed to establish likelihood of success. It said, well, I'm only required at this point to find whether there are serious questions that we have easily met their burden. So it asked the court not to take the district court's opinion as somehow an affirmative finding that we've not met the traditional burden. Second of all, the district court found that there was irreparable harm. I think you raised a good question, which is irreparable harm to what? These aren't two separate standards. The merits relates specifically to whether there's taint of marble relents. Harm is marble relents. Irreparable harm relates to whether there's harm to the plaintiffs based on the interests that they have alleged. And this court, and if I could have a moment to just briefly go through some of the cases where this court in Endangered Species Act cases, in cases that have nothing to do with trees, where the legal claim has nothing to do with protecting forests, this court has specifically looked to harm to the plaintiff's interest recreationally, aesthetically in that forest. In Alliance for the Wild Rockies versus Cottrell, a case is brought under the Appeals Reform Act. The substance of that case is whether or not the agency
had Section 7 or Section 9 case.
That was not under the Endangered Species Act at all. But the substance of that claim under the Appeals Reform Act had nothing to do with forests. And yet the court looked specifically at the plaintiff's interest that they go to the forest and use and enjoy the area recreationally. That was enough to set up irreparable harm. Same thing in League of Wilderness Defenders versus Connington. That was a claim under the National Environmental Policy Act. The statute has nothing to do with trees. It doesn't protect trees. It doesn't protect forests. And yet the court looked at the injury that the plaintiffs alleged of recreational and aesthetic interest and found that that was sufficient to establish irreparable harm. And the case that's the most on point is the case from this court from just last year, 2016, Alliance for the Wild Rockies versus Christensen. Different than Alliance versus Cottrell, this is Alliance versus Christensen. It's an unpublished decision. It's at 663 in Federal Appendix 515. That case was under the Endangered Species Act. And in that case, even though the case is about the Canadian Insects Habitat, the court, the district court, coincidentally enough, conflated the harm and merits factors. And the Ninth Circuit, in the unanimous decision, found that the district court improperly conflated those factors. Not even addressing irreparable harm, finding irreparable harm only on the basis of finding the merits. And while the Ninth Circuit found that that was improper, it found that that error was harmless. And it specifically explained, citing Alliance versus Cottrell, that because the plaintiffs had alleged an interest in the forests, a recreational and aesthetic interest in that area, and because it was uncontested that the logging would affect those forests, that was irreparable. That on that factual basis alone, regardless of the impact on the species, that the plaintiffs established irreparable harm. So, Your Honor, I think that this case is nearly identical, if not identical, to Alliance for the Wild Rockies versus Christensen, even if the district court erred in conflating into the factors. And again, our position is that it didn't, because it separately then addressed exactly why it made its finding. But even if it did, that error was harmless, just as it was in Alliance versus Christensen. Plaintiffs here have alleged.
If not only if we disagree with you, what should we do?
We disagree, it should be remanded for further findings. Judge Aiken made a finding of serious questions, which is the appropriate legal standard. If as a matter of law, there was an error in conflating those two standards, and it should be remanded for further findings of the issue of irreparable harm. Your Honor, touching briefly on the merits, to focus your response on irreparable harm, I want to emphasize that on that factor, this court reviews the district court's decision for an abuse of discretion. And if the district court applied the correct legal standard, then that opinion can only be reversed if it is illogical, implausible, or not based on facts or mere inferences from facts that are in the record. Here, the district court applied the correct legal standard. This court, in lines of the Wild-Rogers versus Cottrell, clearly stated that the serious questions test is valid even after winter. Based on the fact that the district court applied the correct legal standard, we only reversed that decision. This court would only reverse the decision if it was implausible, illogical, or not based on facts or inferences from the record. Given the wealth of information, the testimony of Dr. Mullally, given the fact that there is a wide body of scientific literature, surveys that document marble mills in the area, there was certainly evidence of record, or even mere inferences from evidence of record, that support the district court's conclusion. All we're asking for at this point is the opportunity to present our case fully. We have never had a trial, we've not had discovery or depositions or any opportunity to question or cross-examine those witnesses. Counsel highlights that the witnesses were uncontested. Those witnesses submitted declarations that were along with a certain time. The very last set of documents submitted to the district court before the record was closed. All we're asking for is the opportunity to have our full case heard. The district court did not abuse its discretion because plaintiffs had been through initial hearing justifying a temporary pause to this project. Thank you.
I'd like to just stress a couple points. With respect to the issue of aesthetic harm, I think the answer to that question is in this course of decision in Garcia v. Google, which says very clearly that irreparable harm has to flow from the alleged legal violation. And in this case, we're only talking about Section 9. Section 9 makes very clear that habitat modification is not a violation of Section 9 unless it actually kills or injures wildlife. And in fact, in this court's decision in the Roseboro case, it noted that the Secretary of Interior specifically added that part into the regulation and talked about it in the 1981 preamble to specifically make it clear to private landowners that habitat modification in the absence of actual death or injury to an invasive species is not a violation of Section 9. So here, for that place to demonstrate irreparable harm, they have to show a legal violation. A violation of Section 9 will cause irreparable harm. The reliance on the Cottrell case is really misplaced. As Mr. Cruz stated, it's an appeals record case. The Forest Service itself, you know, it goes into the appeals process, but the Forest Service operates under the National Forest Management Act, which protects a wide range of interests and uses, and it has to follow and manage the forest. Here, we're only talking about Section 9, which only prohibits take. With respect to this issue of remedy, I guess I'd just like to try to take one more stab at this, which is that the point I was trying to make earlier to the court here is that this court has equated serious questions on the merits to a possibility of success in the merits. And all I'm saying is that if you accept the district court's premise that taking with a single individual, it would be irreparable harm. We suggest that to people. More than that, it has to be at the species level. But even if you accept that premise, the district court's finding is expressly a finding that the plaintiffs only demonstrate a possibility of mere life being in the harvest area. That finding's been made, and that's why I suggested that remand is not necessary. The record was put forward. The plaintiffs had every opportunity to put on whatever they wanted, or if they wanted to take free hearing discovery. All those processes were waived. We voluntarily stopped the harvest to allow this proceeding to occur. There was no drop-dead deadline, impending date, or anything of that matter. So in this case, just for made the finding, they didn't meet their burden. They only showed, at best, there was a possibility that Merrillette's harvest is free.
Serious question of possibility.
If this court's precedence under the Southwest Voter Education case and the Wild Swan case suggests there is no difference, that serious questions is
akin to a possibility.
Right. You say that we shouldn't remand for further proceedings. We should have simply reversed.
That's correct, Your
Honor. And the reason for that is, again?
Because they didn't meet their burden. The evidence that...
That's the serious question.
They didn't meet their burden to demonstrate the irreparable harm was likely. And what I'm saying is that... What I'm saying is the factual question that the court identified as being material for the irreparable harm issue, the plaintiffs only demonstrated a possibility of that fact being true. Because they only demonstrated that fact as being a possibility, the court's already made that finding. The court's saying it's only possible to parallel certain harms theory. Therefore, the finding's been made, the plaintiffs didn't meet their burden. It's unnecessary to remand for further proceeding when the district court's already made the finding that it's not likely that birds are harvested.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Appreciate your arguments in this case.